You'll read with me, 1 Corinthians 3, 1 through 17. Brothers and sisters, I could not address you as people who live by the Spirit, but as people who are still worldly, mere infants in Christ. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere humans? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere human beings? What, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants, through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labor. For we are God's co-workers in his service. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace that God has given me, I laid a foundation as a wise builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should build with care, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If anyone builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but yet will be saved, even though only as one escaping through the flames. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple, and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person. For God's temple is sacred, and you together are that temple. Well, a picture is worth a thousand words. You might say maybe a word picture would be more valuable than that. I don't know. I guess there could be a debate about that. But research has shown that actually pictures and images produce effectiveness in marketing. So like I think some of the stuff I was reading this week said, here's one stat, consumers are 85% more likely to purchase a product after watching a product video. So clearly there's some correlation between images and, you know, purchasing in the marketplace. And I think it goes with even what we're looking at today with what Paul is saying here and with these big ideas that we see in the Bible. Y'all probably noticed from, if you know anything about Jesus in the Gospels, Jesus spoke in parables and he used word pictures all the time. Well, Paul's doing that here, and I think his point is to facilitate memory. Well, back in Paul's day, memory was a big deal, right? Because you didn't have video recorders and cameras to sort of store things. You didn't have computers or flash drives and all that good stuff that we have to help remember stuff of importance. So how did they remember things? You know, you could scribble something on a wall maybe or make a note, or you know, they had scrolls and books and stuff, but those were kept largely at maybe schools or at a synagogue or some gathering place, and people wouldn't have these in their homes. So how did they remember things? Well, they had something called the art of memory. It was actually a whole discipline that people would practice and work at so that they could remember, you know, large quantities of information. And these, remember we've been talking a lot about these sophists, these orators that would travel around and were like celebrities, and they would speak. And they would go into a town and have this huge entourage that was following them, and it would be a big to-do. Well, some of the old other ancient documents that aren't in the scriptures, one of which is written by this old Roman rhetorician named Quintilian, says that a part of the reason why this oratory, this speaking, was so popular was because of their skill and memory. These people could remember unbelievable amounts of information and speeches and arguments and, you know, all these, I guess, documents or things that were common knowledge, they could remember and recite it offhand. And so it was really amazing And these people traveled around the depth of their memory. And that was a part of what made rhetoric so popular, is that it was sort of mind-blowing to see how much these people could remember. Well, remember how Paul said, that's not really what I was all about. I had a different strategy. I had a different technique. I was about the simple, sort of unadorned truth of the gospel message. And I think Paul, though, today, as we're seeing these two images, we're going to talk about two really big images that Paul's giving us today. I really think the reason, a part of the reason at least, that Paul does that is to help our memory. May not be as much for his own memory. Maybe it was. We don't know. Whereas these people that were traveling around, you know, they had all these devices and they would connect images with ideas, and there's entire books written on this stuff that's really fascinating. But they would do that for their own memory, to sort of help them as they spoke. And I think Paul and Jesus likewise gave us images to help us remember profound truths that maybe would slip our minds otherwise. So today we're going to look at two big images. The first one is, we've read the text, you're well aware, is the image of a field, or maybe some farmland, and you've got some laborers or some farmhands that are working the field. And the second image is that of a building and its contractors. So you've got some edifice, and there's people working on it, and Paul's going to use this image to kind of say something to us. So I think one of the big things that we're going to see, again, goes back to this division. Paul's saying these images are going to help us understand why division is really silly if we're a part of what God's doing in the world and we're in the truth. So he uses these things to sort of undercut all the divisiveness and the arguments and the quarrels and the squabbles and the factions that we get caught up in sometimes. Well, let's look at the first one, shall we? We'll jump right in. God's field and farmhands. Well, after dealing with the maturity stuff, remember we looked at last week what it meant to be mature, Paul now brings back these divisions. He mentions Apollos, he mentions Peter again, he mentions Paul, and how everyone's all stirred up about these different leaders. And he wants to address it again directly. He says, if maturity looks like this, maturity looks like love for God, which we talked about last week. If maturity is cross-centered, so the cross stays in the middle, in the center of what we do, then you're not mature, is what he says to the church. You're still babes. You're still worldly. If you look at verses 5 through 7, I'm not going to read them, just glance at them there. He brings it back up. What is Apollos? What is Paul? God is the one making it grow. What matters is the growth, not necessarily who's doing the watering, who's doing the planting, etc. Well, there's a man named John Chrysostom who was a famous preacher in the early church days, back in like the 3rd and 4th century, I believe it was. And he was nicknamed Golden Mouth because he was just such an amazing preacher. And he said this. He has a lot of recorded sermons. He said this of, I guess someone was there taking notes, writing down what he was saying. And he said this about this particular passage. I first cast the word into the ground, speaking of Paul, I guess, or maybe himself. Apollos added his own part. He'll probably be speaking of Paul. But the whole was of God. So he's saying, really, God's doing it all. And you'll see in verse 10, take a quick look if you have your Bible at verse 10, Paul says, first of all, according to the grace given to me. So it's grace. So God, what Paul is doing, even the watering, the planting, and the growth, in reality, are impossible apart from God. God's really supplying everything. Not only the materials, but the strength to do it, the wisdom to do it, and he's giving the growth. So that's what I think Chrysostom is getting at, is that the whole of this process is of God. Okay, so God's doing the work here. Why, therefore, are we all worked up about who's doing what? Right? That's kind of where Paul's going with this, is why are you worked up about what Apollos did or what Paul did, if in reality God is doing everything and we can take no credit for it? But here in our passage today, Paul is talking about ministers primarily. And of course, there's application for everyone in this room. We're going to talk about that. But on the surface, Paul's talking about ministers, right? That's what Paul was. That's what Apollos was. That's what Peter was. These are ministers. These are apostles. He's saying the church is the field, and the message of the cross, the word, because in context, that's what Paul's talking about, right? We've been talking about the message and how it's foolishness and all of those things. I'm not going to hash all that out again, but we've been talking about those things. That is the seed. And the farmhands or the laborers are ministers, like Paul and Apollos or myself. And this is important because very often in organizations, factions arise because of the leaders. And it's really kind of ironic in a lot of ways. But I think people feel some kind of solidarity. They feel some kind of connection with their leaders. You see this with celebrities. You see this, see it in politics today a lot. We see it with our sports icons and our sports teams. When our team wins, we sort of feel like a sense of accomplishment, do we not? Like, my team won. I mean, in some weird way, we're not on the team, but somehow we feel like we've won, you know? And so y'all understand very much, I think, what we're talking about. But Paul says that that will not work in God's economy. That won't work in the way God does things. Why not? Well, unlike the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox, or if you're from my part of the woods, maybe the North Carolina Tar Heels or the Duke Blue Devils, these teams may have the same goal, right? They're wanting to win a championship. That's their goal. But they work against each other to get there. Do they not? They're considered enemies. I want you to fail. I want to succeed. So they do whatever they can to make the other guy fail and for themselves to rise above. Well, it should be obvious that won't work in God's kingdom, especially with what Paul is saying here in our passage today. He says, the water is not against the planter. I mean, how much sense would that make, right? If the guy's planting the seed and the other guy's going kicking it out of the ground, and if it's not, nothing's going to grow. Of course, so the water and the planter have to work together. They have the same goals, and they work with each other, not against each other. And look at the first half of verse 8, if you will. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose. It says, that's actually out of the NIV, which should be the translation that's in the pew. It says, have one purpose. Well, interestingly, this is one of the benefits of reading multiple translations. It'll sort of cause you to ponder. The more literal translations, like the Authorized Version or the King James, if some of y'all are into the King James, or the New American Standard, translate it this way. Now the one who plants and the one who waters, or some of them will say, now he who plants and he who waters, because in the Greek they use the masculine pronouns everywhere pretty much. But the idea is anyone who plants, anyone who waters are one. And it leaves it at that. It doesn't say one had the same purpose or have one purpose. That's been added by the translators. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just there. Interpretive license, where they're trying to understand what the original writer was getting at. Some translations prefer to just leave it at one. But then that puts it in your hands to understand, okay, what's he referring to? One what? How are they one? Some, you can say, they're one in goal, or one in their purpose is one, and that's where how the NIV takes it. They say they have the same goal. Other translations take it as equality, so they're equal. So they'll say, maybe one of status. So it's communicating a little bit of a different idea there. And then some just leave it at the plain old one and leave it up to you to figure out what you want to fill in there. But which is it? Right? That kind of raises the question. We want to know. All right, which is it? Are they equal in that, like, pure equality, same status or the same value, or is it they have the same goal? Like, what's Paul saying here? Well, most likely it was left ambiguous because the writer wanted it ambiguous. And probably, most likely, what Paul is getting at is that he had both in mind. Actually, there is an equality. Both watering and planting are necessary, right? They're essential to the process. If you don't plant the seed, nothing's going to grow. If you don't water it, nothing's going to grow. It's got to have both, so they're both essential. There's equality there. But at the same time, they're working in the same field. They have the same master, right? And so they're working toward the same goal. So I think, in a way, both are there. But I wanted to point that out because I noticed immediately some of y'all may be reading different translations and were wondering about that. And that is a relatively significant difference. Well, I think our church has a lot to learn from this right now and be part of the reason why I bring it up. We've just transitioned, have we not, into a season of life with a new pastor. And so I'm talking about myself here. I don't necessarily enjoy doing that, but it's part of it, I guess. It's easy to focus on the differences and maybe some similarities of your leaders. Well, you know, Jim did it this way, and Sam, he did it that way, and Josh is doing this thing over here. And to make those comparisons, whether you're making value judgments or not, it's just natural to do that, right? But what Paul's saying here, that's not necessarily bad, I don't think, to recognize differences. That's just natural. It's going to happen. But how caught up are we in it? And I'm not pointing fingers here, but this is just where the text led me today. One plants, one waters, God gives the growth. It's the end of the day, right? Me and Jim and Sam and all the other leaders before that, if we're about the truth, we're all laboring in the same field, are we not? And we have the same goal, and we all serve the same God. And so, none is greater than the other, and we shouldn't get wrapped up in the idea of our leaders too much, because it can lead to divisions, and that's what we see in this Corinthian church. So, let that be a warning to us, and not to say again that this is going on. It's just, this is where the text is leading us this morning. So, let that be a warning to us to not get too wrapped up in our leaders, but mainly if they are faithful and if they are preaching God's truth. That's where we want to focus in on and really, I think, be concerned. So, okay, there's two things we've seen, then we're going to look at the next image really quick. First is that two big reasons not to bicker and not to squabble. These are the two things we've seen. And those are the big things that Paul is pointing out. He's saying, if these two things are true, how silly is it that you're divided? And the first one is this. Our leaders are engaged in the same task. So how silly is it to get all wrapped up in the leaders? They're serving God. They've been given a task, and they're just being faithful seeking to be faithful in what God has given them. They're laboring in the same field after the same objective. Not different agendas. So we don't need to be too wrapped up in it. That's the first reason not to be divided. The second one is that we ourselves, right? When y'all are out in the community or in your family or in your workplace or wherever you're at, and you spread seed, because you do that too, you share God's Word, you're talking truth with people, whatever that looks like, I hope you're doing that. And if you are, that seed or water is being planted in the lives of others. It might even be in here. We're doing that in each other's lives. We really have no right to be wrapped up either, right? In the fruit. Why not? Because it's God that's making the seed grow, right? We're just means. God is using us to bear the fruit. And so there's no reason to boast or to be jealous or to brag or to get wrapped up in the comparisons there either. So, two reasons I think Paul is giving us that show how silly it is for us to be, too wrapped up in our differences and to be divided. All right, well, the second image, let's look at this one. A building and its contractors. And Paul is wanting to emphasize, I think, with this image, some of the same stuff. There's a lot of overlap here, but I think he may be trying to deal with an objection as well. Maybe Paul's got this sort of imaginary person in his mind, or he's trying to imagine what the Corinthian church might think of what he's just said, and he's, okay, let me try and deal with that in advance. So I think what we have here is, we just said, we're laboring in the same field, have the same goals, and that's sort of where this building thing is going. We're building on the same building. We have different projects. Some maybe are electricians, some maybe are plumbers, some are hanging sheetrock, some are doing the framing. That we've got different tasks, but we're building the same building. So he's saying that's some similarity to the image to the image that we just looked at. But the difference is, I think, this, that there's this potential objection someone could maybe raise, and I'm going to sort of do that by way of a dialogue. So if you'll bear with me here, it felt like it would be a lot easier for me to do it this way. So I'm going to have this imaginary dialogue. You can just kind of follow along with me here. All right, I'm going to have Paul, and then there's going to be, just for ease, Pauline. All right, so Paul and Pauline here. Paul says this, "Why are you divided? Some plant, some water, God gives the growth. Therefore, you have no reason to boast or be jealous, because God is doing all the real work here. We are nothing. Pauline. Well, if God is doing the growing, my performance isn't important. God is God, and He can make a plant sprout up from anything. So I guess my role really doesn't matter. Paul. While that may be possible for God to grow a plant out of anything, it's not how God has freely chosen to do things. He uses means like us to accomplish His purpose. We must be careful how we live and work, because we will be evaluated by God one day. Our work will be tested. Pauline. But if we were saved by the blood of Christ and are all going to heaven, what I do here on earth really doesn't matter then, does it, if I'm just going to heaven? I'm just a plant getting planted and watered. I'm not doing anything. So what does it matter? Well, in a sense, you are right. But we must distinguish between the task itself and the results. The results of our labor are out of our control. We are not responsible for that, because God gives the growth. However, we are responsible for the tasks that God has given us to do, to be faithful in the things that God has asked us to do, and how we use the materials God gives us to build with. Our work will be tested by fire one day, just like a building. We will see whose work was quality and whose was not. The fire will make it plain to everyone. Pauline. But even those who build less quality work will still be saved, right? Yes, but as through fire. Do you remember the story of Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 13 through 19? Abraham gave Lot the first choice, because that's to go back to Genesis. They came to a place where they were both very wealthy and they had so much stuff that they had to separate, because their helpers were bickering about whose animals are going to get this and who's going to be fed. There's just too much of it. And they were literally destroying the land. And so Abraham said to Lot, "You need to go this way, I'm going to go that way, because we can't do this together." Lot surveyed the land and chose the better land selfishly. And Abraham ended up with the poorer plot. And Lot, if you know the story, ended up living in this place called Sodom. And Sodom was a place of enormous wickedness. And God ended up destroying it. But in that passage, some of the commentators I was reading believe that Paul is almost alluding in a way to what happened at Sodom and Gomorrah, because Lot narrowly escaped as like the fire was coming down out of heaven. And so he's making an analogy here, like that will be what it's like for those of us who do not build quality work. Have you ever lost everything in a fire? It's not a pleasant experience, especially if it's something you've labored over for years. And so it will be for those who do not build responsibly and according to the Lord's instruction and will. Pauline, I see, but will our loss be only earthly loss? That's not so bad, is it? We'll all be equal in heaven, right? No, our losses are actually heavenly losses. Heaven is a place like earth in a sense, and there will be structures much like what we have here. Some will be greater than others, and will have more responsibility and benefits, so to speak. The quality of our building here on earth will not be something isolated to our earthly existence. If we build well, we will receive rewards given by God in glory. Those who do not will lack those rewards and blessings. Pauline, but why is God being so upset about a bunch of stuff? It's just material stuff anyways, isn't it? Does God really care about that much about a building? Well, this is Paul. The building is just a metaphor. It's just a picture. God does care about stuff to a degree, but what I'm speaking of here is people. People make up this field and this building. In fact, the collective church is the very temple of God. So the building we are laboring over is not a random office building or factory. It's the very temple of the living God. His presence resides in us. So it's not stuff that we're talking about here, but people. Well, that's my imagining, maybe what was running through Paul's mind as he wrote that last section there. And I don't know if that's of help to you, but that was the best way I felt like for me to kind of go through that content. So now I'm going to ask a few quick questions as we close. What are you building with? What part of the building are you working on? You see verses 10 and 11 right there. It says, by the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation. So we're not laying the foundation. Paul says, he's laid it. The foundation is laid. It's there. We're not touching that. That was the role of the apostles. That's what they did. They wrote the scriptures. Now we have them. That foundation is laid. And we're building on top of that. But if you want to build, you have to lay on that foundation. And that foundation is Jesus Christ. And there is no other. So what gifts do you have? What has God blessed you with? What calling is on your life? If you have gifts, whatever they are, God is calling you to use them in His service in some way to build on this foundation. Okay, now what are you building with? This is another critical question. Paul refers to gold and silver and precious stones. Then he refers to wood, hay, and straw. But what does that mean? What kind of actions are and thoughts are gold and silver? And what kinds of actions and thoughts are wood, hay, and straw? That becomes a really critical question, does it not? Well, you remember that we've been talking about this culture, right? And how this culture, with the sophists and the orators traveling around, they were building their sort of reputation on their ability to persuade people. Remember that? Or their memory. Or all these sort of tricks that they had going on. And in context, Paul is saying, we don't want to do that. That's, in a way, that's earthly and fleeting and cultural stuff. Tomorrow, that's going to be gone. That's just a whim. And he's saying, I built on the foundation that is Jesus Christ. I built this foundation. And that is eternal and lasting. And they aren't fleeting. And so, I think Paul is making comparison. If you look at the whole context of the last couple chapters, that's what Paul is getting at with these materials. He's saying the gold and the silver and the precious stones are Jesus. That's the big stuff. And the other things that were going on in the culture with the persuasion and the tricks and the memory and all these other sort of things that people were using and the content of whatever their message was, which clearly wasn't Christ, that stuff is wood and hay and straw. So, when you're gone, or when I'm gone, if we're not building with the eternal things and with the lasting things, what becomes of the church? Like, what will this be? Just be a reflection of the culture, whatever is here. If it's a parking lot, or if there is people that gather here, it's just going to be a reflection of the culture. It's built upon cultural whims. So I want to ask you now, are you at work? Do you have the tools in your hands? Are you getting your hands dirty? Are you in the game? Have you shown up for work, I want to say? We've got, interestingly this year, some of you will know, and we were talking about this at men's group this morning, that there's some movies coming out this year that are big, going to be big blockbuster, major motion pictures that are all about the Bible. Got one coming out called Noah in late March, which will have, you know, Russell Crowe's like Noah. So that's going to be big. And then Exodus is going to be a movie starring Christian Bale in December that's coming out. He's going to be Moses. And then you've got a movie starring, I think her name's Julia Ormond, about Mary, the mother of Jesus. And it's going to be a prequel to The Passion of the Christ. I don't know when that's coming out, but that's slated to be really soon. And why do I bring this up? Well, in a way, I think it's exciting. You know, you should get excited about this kind of thing. But in a way, I don't think it's exciting. And because the problem behind it is that I feel like we're a spectator culture. We've gotten so that our Christianity has to be proclaimed by Hollywood or Washington. And that's where we get the message out, is we go to the movie theater, we go to Washington, and that's kind of what's projecting the message for us. And it's not that that's in and of itself evil. But I want to ask you, are you doing what you need to do? Are you carrying your cross? Are you living for Jesus in your house and in your workplace and whatever you do? It does no good to tell people to go see the movie Noah and go see the ark. If you yourself are not on the ark is Christ, and there is another judgment that is coming. And it's not pleasant to talk about that. I don't like to be the guy to do that, but that's the reality, and that's the message of the Bible. There is another flood of judgment coming one day. We don't know when that will be. And God has provided an ark for us, and His name is Jesus. Are you on that ark? Don't tell people to go see Noah. Maybe that's a good thing. If you're not on the ark. Same with the Exodus movie. It does no good to tell people to go to the movies and see Christian Bale play out Moses. To see Christian Bale do this neat thing. And I have nothing against him. You know, so I'm not picking on him. I don't know where he stands with God. I have no clue. But I think too many of us are pretending. Too many of us are acting, and too many of us sort of get wrapped up in all of that. But do you believe that just as Moses went into Egypt to get the Israelites out from bondage, do you believe that Jesus came and that He came into Egypt, this world, to get you out of bondage, to get you out of your slavery to sin? That's the message of the Bible. That's the critical question. Not what is Hollywood doing, not what is Washington doing. And so I feel compelled to share that with you this morning as we think about this field and this building. Are you in the field? Do you have your hands dirty? Are you laboring? Are you building? Do you have your tools in hand? Watching a video may have some place, but it's not going to save you, and neither is coming to church. So I want to encourage you this morning, as we come to this table here in just a moment, to think about these things. Are you at the table with Christ? Are you living for Him? Are you laboring for Him? Amen.